Welcome to Drive-Through HR. Hope everybody had a little bit of a chance to recharge and relax. Long weekend. So everybody's fired up, jumping back in, making a difference in the world today. I'm sure that's the way it's going down. So let's get to our guests. First of all, you're listening to Brian Nation William, Drive-Through HR, talking about HR every day, same time. During lunch, Central Time, 12 to 12:30. Check it out. So, Nikita, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, if you could have you introduce yourself. It's first time on the show, so that's good. We like to get new voices in the space. So, if you would introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll roll into kind of what's top of mind in your world.
It's very exciting for me, Brian. Happy to introduce myself. My name is Nikita Bernstein. I am the CEO and founder of Fair Setup, fairsetup.com. We came up with a new way to do performance management of compensation, a sort of an evolutionary next step in how to manage people. By background, I previously co-founded Jove, Journal of Visualized Experiments. It's the first scientific video journal in existence, jove.com. And Fair Setup is effectively something I came up with when I ran into problems at that company. So I've been at it for about 2 years. We have a team, we have clients, and it's been quite exciting.
Well, I am definitely a huge fan of setups and any new way that anybody comes up with to do performance management. I am about 1,000% ready to listen. So, because I just think it's such a... That is such a messed up part of the people touches in the space. So, I mean that's probably understatement. That would probably be the understatement of the decade right there. That it's just fairly messed up. So, but how can performance management? Let me take a step back. So let's go into good old blue ocean here. And tell us the way that performance management, because I've got an idea I want to run by you, can actually be the best, right? Because we all know how to do it bad, right? That's kind of a competency that I think you could pretty much spread across every organization in the country. So you've got a like-minded start. It all sucks. So blue ocean this, and tell us how it can be better.
Okay, well, I mean... First, I think it's important to note that I think the intentions are good in general. People want to keep track of what's going on. People want to manage performance. People want to, I mean, we kind of came from the industrial age where you had to come up with some way to manage teams, to manage performance of various businesses. So it's performance management is one of those things where oftentimes it's necessary. It's just, it's kind of like capitalism or democracy, you know, everything else might be, it's not the perfect system, but everything else is worse. So from my vantage point as an entrepreneur, however, the question when I hit the issue of performance management wasn't, you know, what's out there now? It was, how do I survive? How do I solve my problems? And the problem really comes down to, especially from my vantage point at the time, how do I pay people for the value that they create within an organization? And I was solving it within a smaller organization. My company was about 40 people at the time. But as I kind of started working on this problem and came up with my solution, or rather we came up with our solution, it wasn't just me, we realize that the problem is huge, and it spans both small, mid-sized, and large companies. Now, here is the question of how do we position ourselves and where do we go? But at the end of the day, the problem for mid-sized and large organizations, I think, is that for historical reasons, you know, we started with performance reviews being done on paper. You have pen, paper, and once a year you sit down and you try to go through the process. And the reason you do it once a year is because it's very laborious to do it more often in many cases. Then you had a lot of technological solutions come about, and instead of making the process simpler, oftentimes they make it more complicated. They have these extensive processes that now all they did is they moved the effectively record keeping from offline into online, right? And this is where I came in, and I looked at what's out there, and people either try to micromanage people or employees, or you have these long cycle appraisals where people don't even remember what was done 2 months ago, let alone at the beginning of the cycle. So the solution that we came up with is kind of, it's so simple and natural, it kind of hits people when we say it, but we keep track of how people meet expectations in short cycles. And when I say short cycles, they could be weekly, they could be biweekly, they could be monthly, generally no longer than monthly. So our system helps teams keep track of how everyone meets expectations, and it helps calculate the relative impact of every participant, right? So then we take that impact and we help companies connect impact to compensation, to management decisions, what have you. And the process for how expectations are collected is very collaborative and very open generally. So imagine that you and I are in a team, and let's say there are 10 of us, and you're my manager. You would turn to me and you would say, hey, Nikita, what did you get done? How should you be assessed? So the first step is self-assessment. Then I report on what I have done this week, and this is something that I generally do anyway. And then the team has an opportunity to issue a correction. And oftentimes the correction is, you didn't perform nearly as well as we thought you would, but quite often it's actually the opposite. The team says, actually, you performed above our expectations and you're just being humble, right? So this cycle on a regular basis, it's a low-risk, easy-to-manage process, where you have self-assessment, peer assessment, and then the manager records what is perceived to be fair assessment of someone's performance. And then that data ends up being rolled up into ongoing calculation of people's impact in relation to each other. So then if you kind of, in the ultimate scenario, if you take a bonus pool, set it to be a percentage of your revenues, and distributed according to people's impact, you've set up a profit share that feels like I'm being compensated proportional to the impact that I have and outcomes that I generate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, oh, completely. So I love the, again, I like, you know, I kind of went through your product and looked at it and have been through lots and lots of them. And I agree. I think at the core, most people are just trying to do the best they can, and they want to make an impact, but it's not designed for success. It's usually pretty much designed for failure. The fail points on all of those opportunities.
That's harsh. Failure is oftentimes the outcome, but I think people have, you know, one of the pushback that we get, because initially my line of thinking was very similar to yours in that, look, we have something that you should do away with your present performance management. But that's actually not the case, because you still need annual reviews. You still need to make long cycle decisions. You still need commission-based structures. You still need all of these things. The question is really, how do you tie it together in a much healthier manner so that it actually works? So with a lot of our clients, they roll out Fair Setup in support of their long cycle appraisal. So the long cycle appraisal now takes a lot less time because now you have accumulated historical data, but you still need it in order to make decisions. Now, in some instances, we've seen people do away with those, but it's really on a case-by-case basis.
You know, it's harsh or not. At the end of the day, I think there's so many elements of that I think you have to be realistic in, because I'm all about tying it to performance. I love 360s, but at the end of the day, you're kind of balancing your efforts against status quo. And if your job descriptions are bad, if your leadership component is weighing in on being honest and open, it just makes it much more difficult. And so I'm not trying to be completely idealist here, but that's why I think it's interesting. Anytime anybody tries to reapproach and kind of reinvent, trying to do performance management better, especially when you do 360s, Because how exactly do you validate that you're trying to move things forward? I mean, what are some – that's probably the biggest pushback that I will always have on that is how do we get, like, the same measurements so we can – so we don't keep changing things up so we actually know are we improving, you know, as a company,
I agree.
An individual.
Sorry, go on.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. That was it.
So I totally agree with you. These are difficult questions, and one of my challenges was when I initially started working on the system, it was actually how do you compare apples to oranges, right? So, for example, if you have a multifunctional team where you have somebody who is doing collateral development, somebody else is doing coding, somebody else is doing client relations, and you want them to work in a single unit, kind of in a startup environment especially, you want people to be really aligned with each other. And somehow in startup, when everybody has equity, this question doesn't really arise. We are all naturally interested in the outcomes. But in bigger companies, that alignment gets lost, and departments get siloed out, and it becomes very difficult to get collaborations going. And at the end of the day, it's very difficult to put a measure on each individual, especially comparing individuals to each other. So the way that we solved that problem is we said, look, every business unit has some outcomes that you're chasing. Whether you are a biotech and you're working towards milestones, or whether you are an organization that has ongoing commoditized sales and you're chasing revenues, you have goals that, as an organization, you can measure, right? So then what is really important is whether the team is performing to expectations. So we actually don't, as part of our platform, we don't require people to say what that expectation is in numerical form within the context of our system. Now, they do it in context of their interaction when using our system. But our system allows a single measure to say, okay, you're performing, you're at expectation is if you make X number of sales. You're at expectation is if you're able to implement these features for these clients. And at the end of the day, the question that we recommend people ask of each other is, if I were in your shoes, is this what I would have done? Because priorities change, markets change, circumstances change. It's difficult to really set expectation that is not going to be amended over time. And at the end, one very interesting feature in our software is that at the end of every cycle, every individual gets a relative level with respect to each other that they have. So, for example, if you're employed at level, let's say level 10, you performed at expectation, which is a multiplier of 1, and you worked at 100% throttle, then your level is 10. And somebody else's level may be 5 because they worked only 50% of the time, right? Well, does it feel like you had about twice the impact that they had in the cycle? Yeah, it feels about right. So let's keep going. Or maybe it feels wrong, and let's adjust. And one of the beautiful things about our system is because these conversations happen in very short cycles, it's okay for people to make mistakes. So we had situations where people would accept lower than what they believe to be fair assessment because they felt that it would be more productive for the outcomes of the business unit. One absolutely fascinating example, actually, was when I was working with two colleagues and both performed below expectation, right? So let's say Joe and Bob. And Bob performed below expectation and Joe performed below expectation. And because I was working very closely with Bob, I assessed Bob below expectation. So that was an accurate assessment. But Joe, because Joe was new and I wanted Joe to feel good, I assessed Joe above expectation. And this is happening in front of everybody. And in this instance, the person who was Joe in this story said to me, look, this is not fair. You should downgrade me to below expectation. And this is kind of unheard of. Why would someone ask to be downgraded in a situation where, you know, traditionally, yay, I got away with murder with management? Well, the answer that I got to my question of, well, why did you do this? Joe said, look, the benefit to me from being incorrectly assessed for a week, the benefit is virtually zero. But the cost is the relationship with my peers. The cost is that they're not going to trust me. The cost is that they're not going to work hard because they're not going to perceive that they're being treated fairly. And that is important because in the end that affects everybody, that affects our outcomes. So in the end, an individual asks to be downgraded in context of our system in order to fix the, in order to ensure healthy relationships moving forward. And that, to be honest, that kind of blew my mind. That was a completely unintended and unexpected consequence. But it worked. The team pulled through, the person stayed, worked really hard, and just it was an amazing thing to behold.
Well, and you know, and that probably speaks to one size definitely does not fit all, and that's probably one of the bigger challenges is because of, you know, because of just challenges on resources. You try and deal with, it's hard to customize every situation, and some of the better performance management type companies that I think do a good job, they've got systems that they've really thought through and spent a lot of time about how they action, obviously off of what they're measuring, and really turn it more into just a checklist. They turn it actually into kind of what does the plan look like for the future. And they present it that way, yep, culturally. So the buy-in, I think, is different because everybody has an expectation that they're going to get some good results out of what happens every year. You know, the communication's there. It's really well done. So I think that's probably the biggest driver is that people just anticipate that it's a good thing versus, you know, the, oh my God, what a waste of time. You know, all the negative things, they anticipate that this is a builder to make things better. Culturally, yeah, is a huge, I mean, obviously a huge tipping point. So,
that's so hard. That's so hard because most of the companies that I've come in touch with, they try this and they end up with either getting something that people so very few companies off the top of my head, there are very few companies that I can think of that actually connect individual performance to overall outcomes. You have bonus structures that are percentage of base, which in my opinion are just silly because it disencourages people from pursuing home runs. But it encourages people to keep management happy and to do what management asks them to, but that's about it. And on top of that, to get people to be engaged in the outcomes of the organization rather than the sentiment of their management, it is so hard. And it's the entire industry seems to recognize that this is difficult and they're trying to come up with solutions. But To be perfectly frank, I haven't seen a whole lot of good solutions out there. It seems like a lot of people focus on more management, or they focus on gimmicks, you know, various sorts of rewards, various sorts of cultural activities. Whereas at the end of the day, every employee just wants one thing: they want to be treated fairly, and that's a very difficult question for a lot of people to even broach.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to do a quick quiz with everybody. You're listening to Drive Through HR with our wonderful guest, Nikita Burstein. Hey, Nikita, I totally agree with your idea of appreciating and then recognizing the lower performance and then setting a lower expectations for them. I'm just curious, have you seen any companies who really reward their employees for their failures while doing their performance appraisal cycles?
I'm sorry, just to make sure that we're on the same page. I didn't say to lower expectations. Did I hear you correctly that you mentioned lowering of expectations?
I was talking about treating the employees fairly when we do the performance management cycle. As we have seen, you know, the top performance will always be the top performance. So how are we going to consider the lower performers or just say a reasonable performing guy?
I see. So you're asking, so you have A players in many situations and
mm-hmm.
kind of everybody wants A players, but what about your B players and C players?
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
So I feel like this is actually a very, very good question because one of my challenges, especially at my previous company at Jove, was we have, for example, we had an office admin, and theoretically, office admin is not really building a product and is not really talking to any customers. at the same time, this is someone who influences the very fabric of the organization, right? Like, for example, HR departments are oftentimes kind of the stepchildren of an organization, despite the fact that they're the ones who define the culture and set the tone. And I feel like it's very important to note also the it's very important to note that not everybody can or wants to be an A player. And the question here shouldn't be how do you make people who are comfortable into A players. The question is what is fair treatment of these individuals? How do you get them to buy into the vision of the company without necessarily taking the reins and becoming a leader in the same way a CEO is, right? So within our system, the way we address it is we say, look, there are different levels for within the organization, and people generally have either an external-driven or an internal-driven perception of what is fair, and it's important to have a conversation about it and to find something that works. On top of that, we have a functionality called throttling, which allows people to throttle up and down to match their level of involvement. For example, with developers, this is particularly important. Any manager who thinks that they can have software development talent that works at 100% all the time is deluding themselves. It's just I myself am a developer by training. It's just not possible. So they need to fluctuate between doing sprints, working super hard, and then they need downtime. So with our system allows people to throttle up and throttle down. And sometimes you just need, like, for example, QA talent. They might not ever be your alpha personalities, but they need to be very consistent in what they do. So here their level could be lower, their throttle could be lower. There are ways to address it. And to your other question, you asked whether I know of companies that reward failures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from my vantage point, failures don't really exist in the traditional sense of the word. So as an entrepreneur, you fail over and over and over again until you succeed. And a failure is really more of a test that has come back with a negative result. And that's something that you need to learn from, iterate, and then redeploy successfully. And this is another thing that's very important. If you have 10 people who are trying to, let's say, figure out how to write up collateral to address the market, and at the end of the day, you don't really know which copy will work. And you have 10 people, each one of them takes a stab at it, and for one of them it works. And if, let's say, we drew straws on who takes what segment, you know, who gets the segment that works? It's almost a stroke of luck, but you need all 10 in order to get that one success. So, again, here my goal was to try to come up with a system that at once recognizes individual contributions and individual successes, but also recognizes that no individual really works in a vacuum unless they're completely siloed out. For example, at Fair Setup, yes, I'm the CEO and founder of the company, but I would be absolutely nowhere without my team. So while I'm the primary driver in many respects, their presence and contribution, even when they try to market to a particular they try something and they fail, it is a major contribution to the outcomes that we eventually end up achieving. So, in terms of, I actually heard at one major company not too long ago, I heard a student ask, "Hey," this was at a recruiting event at Harvard, and a student asked, "Hey, so how do you handle failures at your company?" And one of the younger talent at that company said, "Well, the first time we fail, they're very forgiving, but the second time they just don't fail again. And that to me was indicative of a mindset that might not be very conducive to evolution and kind of improvement, iterative improvement within the company. So I think a lot of companies focus on let's do it right the first time, whereas instead they should be focusing on how do we achieve outcomes and what is the shortest path there and what is the acceptable failure rate in order to get there. Does it make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Sorry, I tend to go on to these soliloquies on occasion. I apologize.
No, that's that actually, and a great example. Because I think that's, you know,
individual and organizational risk, how people perceive that and kind of the label they put risk on, is scary and fearful, and it totally hampers innovation and people stepping up saying, I do this every day. I think here is a process improvement that maybe might turn into a product. I call that the file box or the file cabinet, because it's like PhDs all over the world. They've got this research that's sitting in a file cabinet that never sees the light of day because it's not going to be well received in maybe the peer environment or the academic environment. And there's lots of innovation that never ever hit the good of the world because of
we've hit this problem at Jove. There's a lot of the publishing of negative results is a huge problem in the academic community in particular. I know you were making kind of a metaphorical example, but it actually is a huge pain because people don't publish negative results because they can adversely affect your career, academic career. So as a result, you have a lot of people who are repeating past failures, and it would be funny if it were not so sad.
Right.
So, but in companies, it's very much the same thing. So I think a lot of the more successful, more agile companies are companies that take approaches that are very transparent in terms of goals, transparent in terms of how they want to get there, and transparent in actual operations. I was blown away by Valve, which has almost no management structure whatsoever, where people identify the projects that they're going to take. And if you can persuade people to work with you on a project, so much the better. Another great example is Bridgewater Capital. They work with radical transparency, and as I understand, with some great outcomes. There are a lot of companies that are trying to do a lot of things in this area. Google, actually, with their projects that people can undertake with the time that they can allocate towards their own projects. Here, no one cares if they fail, and most of them fail. But it's, from a revolutionary perspective, it's great because the few that succeed end up becoming staple products, kind of like Google Docs.
Absolutely. I mean, Google is put up there as the example because they are the example, right? The evolution happens all the time, and they've spent a lot of money. They've invested in just letting people just play, basically, just intellectually with no downside, figure that out. And that's, I wish other organizations would actually just allocate that 5%, 10%, 20% of the time to let people just use their minds and be creative. And I think it would be a really interesting place, and hopefully we're moving toward that. So we've only got about 45 seconds left, so thank you. Great conversation. Really enjoyed it. I know our listeners, like I said, it was performance management is one of those that we have on every so often because obviously it's a core of HR, but it's I think we made it extra interesting. So, Nisha, great questions. And where can people connect with you, Nikita?
www.fairsetup.com.
There you go, folks.
That's our URL, and we have all of our contact info on there.
Cool. Well, connect up, and we would love to have you back on maybe toward the end of the year, and we'll pick up another lane of conversation. And enjoyed it, folks. Have a great rest of Monday. We are out of here.